Other horns don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate what you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Before we start, on a serious note, I want to take a moment and acknowledge that last week was the first time that we've missed a show. This is our fourth season doing this, and we've never missed a post game until last week. And I appreciate, just so everyone's aware, and again, just out of respect for our fans, kind of knowing what was going on, my mother passed away last week. And as you can imagine, the podcast, amongst a host of other things, took a backseat. So we appreciate your understanding, and we appreciate those who emailed asking where we were and asking for our breakdown. And so that's kind of what was going on last week. So let's get back to what we're here to do, which is talk about Alabama football. And because I am such a method actor, let's re-kick the show. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, we knew that we wouldn't run up a big score against our former offensive coordinator, Jim McElwain, but I didn't expect our guys to look so lethargic about it. What did you see?
Man, I thought we were back at the A-Day game watching, you know, offense versus defense. It was a glorified scrimmage. And I have to tell you, there was only one guy on the entire squad that jumped out to me that played with any fire, and that was Landon Collins. I think everybody else was pretty ho-hum, and they were trying to get the game over as quick as they could.
I think there were maybe a couple more guys that had a little fire, but I want to go back and underscore because I really like the way, as we were watching the game, I really like the way that you put this out there, and I don't want to just skim past it. You know, the fact that we play games like this, and we know that, you know, that the big school will pay the other school to come to town. It's, you know, it's kind of a checkbook game. And there's a lot of teams that do this, not just us. It's sort of universal. This is how some of the smaller programs receive their funding, is that they sign up for games like this. And Alabama played Colorado State. I don't know that we need to get into the numbers. ESPN ran a graphic that showed like 8 or 9 or 10 games over the weekend that were kind of a pay for play. I'm glad they didn't show the graphic for Alabama because ours, whatever the highest one was up there, we were about 50% even higher above that. It was a pretty impressive number. Right. And so what you said during the game as we were watching it was, you know, Alabama, and this was you, I just want to underscore it, you know, Alabama's getting their money's worth here in that this is a scrimmage game and we're going to treat it like a scrimmage.
Yes. Yes. I mean, from the get go, it just seemed like we were not playing with the right energy, with the right intensity that, you know, Alabama teams have been accustomed to playing under Saban. And he even addressed that in the coaches show. He said, you know, there's only a handful of players on the team that were even in 2010. We lost 3 games. Mm-hmm. He said a lot of these players, they have not lost a game in here. Ones that have, for the last 2 years that we've lost a game, it didn't cost them anything. They still were able to accomplish their goal. And so for those that didn't get to see the show, I just thought it was a great comment because it was like, these guys don't know the repercussions of the letdown and not preparing to play with the right intensity all the time. And well, I think Saban's doing a good job of, I think he's really going to beat them over the head with that this week.
Yeah, and that's a great point. In fact, that's a phenomenal point. It has been since 2010 that we have lost a game that truly did cost us something. Losing to LSU, you know, hurt. Losing to A&M last year hurt, but it didn't cost us anything. It just, you know, it made for a lousy week the next week, right?
Yes.
But it didn't cost us anything relative to our overall goals. Last year, we still won the SEC. We still won the national title. The year before, we still got a chance to rematch, you know, LSU and play for the national title. So you're right. It has been since, you know, November of 2010 that we have lost a game that truly has cost us something. And if you go back and you reconcile the roster that we have today against that sort of timeline, there's a that's a fantastic point. A lot of guys on the roster that have not suffered that kind of loss.
And they it's when you watch them play, that's what you notice. That's what you notice right now. And so when we came out on offense, I thought we started well. I liked the play calls early on that first series when we were moving the ball. You know, I liked them getting the ball to O.J. Howard. And then I loved the slant pattern to Kenny Bell. You know, that next play was a great call because that's perfect for, you know, routes that he runs well at. And so we went down the field. We had some good intensity. We scored that first touchdown. You know, we had three and outs. And I think two of those three and outs, you know, we had like a 3rd and 7 and we completed a 4-yard pass. We had a 3rd and 8. We completed a 5-yard pass. And so we started off well, but we petered out pretty quickly.
Yeah. I thought across the board, we were, you know, very, very conservative. We did a lot of, you know, parroting what you said on third down situations. We did a lot of inside the chains, and I understand doing that some. You know, if you have 8 yards, you really want to complete the pass at 9. But I get that sometimes there are opportunities underneath. There's a soft underneath. And if you have a playmaker that can operate in space, then sometimes that can be an appropriate call. We just seem to be doing that consistently. You know, when you need, you know, eight yards and you run a 7-yard curl, that's not what you want to do. And we seem to be doing inside the chains or inside the yard mark situation. And I found that to be a little disappointing.
We do. We did in the game. And so to your point, right, at this point, we knew they weren't going to run the score up, like you said, because of who we were playing and because of McElwain. But you want to get up and get some good momentum early, right, so you can bring some of the young guys in. And so back to your point real quick, on the second drive, we're up 7-0, okay? It is a 3rd and 12, and A.J. throws the ball to Brian Vogler, who catches the ball and makes a couple yards and ends up gaining 8 yards on the play. Mm-hmm. So back to your point, right? You throw it to Brian Vogler on a 3rd and 12 and he gets a total of 8 yards. It's not like Yak is in his DNA. And so it's like, why was he even the person that you threw the ball there to?
Yeah, that's not your dynamic playmaker in space, right? And I love him making an 8-yard completion, and at almost any other time, that would be perfect.
Yes.
But 3rd and 12.
No, I felt like I actually felt like AJ, you know, was throwing off his back foot a lot. There was a lot of times that he, you know, all the media was talking about the pressure and he was under pressure, and so he was having to drop the ball off to a safety valve. I don't buy that. There was a lot of times that he had a pretty clean pocket and he had time to throw the ball. And I just think he made some poor decisions in this ball game. I think this was I think this is a game he'd like to get back. Of those he's played in the past handful of games, this is one I think he'd really like to have back.
Well, I think you're perfectly right on that one. This is one that he'd like to get back. I do want to kind of disagree with you on the pressure. You know, sometimes pressure begets pressure. And so he was clean last week, wasn't even touched by the defense. You know, he had 2 sacks this Saturday against Colorado State. You know, Calvin Tonga, the nose guard, blew up Ryan Kelly a couple times. He had pressure. And so sometimes you get pressure and you get sacked. And sometimes you get pressure and you get hit. Sometimes they're coming and the line actually does hold up. But because last time you got put on your can, they may not get to you this time, but they get to you mentally. And that's what Saban talks about, affect the quarterback. Affecting the quarterback isn't always sacking him. It isn't always deflecting a pass. It isn't always getting an interception. It's getting in his head. And I think McCarron allowed himself to be affected, which I think goes right to your point of this is one he'd like to have back.
No, that's true. That's true. Maybe he was just anticipating something that really wasn't there. I did notice him throwing off his back foot sometimes. On that interception coming out of halftime, you know, you want to force a punt. You get a 3-and-out by the defense. You've got the ball back. You want to get some momentum going. that interception where, I mean, he was clearly on the left hash, okay? And he got pressure in that situation, but he threw the ball off his back foot to the right sideline and tried to complete that pass that he should have never thrown. I mean, that was a decision I was really surprised he made.
That one was disappointing, and it was especially disappointing because we came out of half. The first three plays were actually completions to Christian Jones. We didn't come out just passing. We came out passing to Christian Jones. And the fourth pass, you know, we went to another receiver. And I'm not blaming the receiver. I'm just saying we went to another receiver. We wanted to maintain the passing game, and that's where we were picked off. Too easy to second guess. But you wonder if you don't come out, complete three passes, march down the field, if you don't then kind of sprinkle in some run. It's too easy to, you know, kind of ask that question. I almost feel guilty doing it, you know, in hindsight because of what that is. But yeah, maybe he felt like, okay, now I'm getting comfortable. I can do something. And then he tried to do too much. I think he'd like to have this one back.
Well, but to your point about the run for a quick second, you know, I noticed one of the sports writers from AL.com that referenced the 21 rushes. Now, granted, we only had 48 plays on offense.
Yeah.
Those three and outs, all those three and outs really affected the, you know, that number of plays, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But they had 21 carries for the day. And I think I read that was the lowest carries since a game in 2004. And
yeah,
so
you have
for an
read
Alabama
that.
Team, right? I mean, that's, I mean, to your point, I think I read where we had one rush in the third quarter and we only rushed the ball four or five times in the fourth quarter. So we only actually ran the ball like five times the whole second half.
Yeah, we, you know, 21 carries and what's even, you know, what compounds that is, you know, we netted 66 yards. And in fact, a lot of those came on one run, you know, from Yeldon. In fact, his first carry after his, you know, kind of mini suspension. So the running game was, you know, non-existent. And so you think of, you know, you come out of pass out of the halftime, you know, you've maybe peeled a little bit of paint. You move the ball very aggressively. Again, I I'm not trying to play, you know.
No, you're Monday at the 25 afternoon. Yard line. You're the 21st and 10 at the 25. I agree with you. That would have been a great time to, you know, to possibly do that. If not, at least do a play action there.
Right.
What else jumped out at you on offense? What was, you know, obviously the play of Christian Jones was awesome, you know, with him having to step up with Cooper being out. How did you feel about the play of the freshman OJ Howard?
Well, I this is one we need to mark down, and I think we called it last week. We both, you know, both in the preseason, we indicated that this was a guy to watch. Last week against, you know, in our pregame show, we didn't do a postgame, but we did a pregame for A&M, and I think we both, one of our offensive playmakers was OJ Howard, and he seems to be a guy that is emerging. And so, you know, let's be very clear, listeners, this is a guy. Is a future star, and we've tagged a couple other guys, and you know, and our hit ratio, I think, on that is pretty good. This is a guy that I'm tagging clearly is a future star. You know, the worst play that I've seen him make, and I kind of use that, you know, in air quotes, is his very first collegiate pass when we tried to go to him against Virginia Tech, and it was just a little bit out of his reach. Maybe, you know, probably should have hit him on the hands. He probably should have got it. But since then, he has been a very effective player for us, and we seem to be very intentional in trying to work the ball to him. I think we're trying to grow him up so that he will be, you know, a quasi veteran later in the season. And that's kind of my spill on him. I think he's going to be a star.
Well, I can't remember what series it was, but we tried, at the beginning of the ball game where we faked the ball to Jostin Fowler in that first series.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out in the flats on the, like as a waggle route, if you would, on the left there, and had his big 23 yard completion. We came back to that well several times.
Mm-hmm.
And they figured it out after the first time. I mean, there was one series there somewhere in the middle of the game where we tried that same action to the right side to him. And the very next play, we tried it to the left side on back-to-back plays. And so to your point, we were definitely intentionally going, trying to get him involved. I almost think they should have just tried to change some of the routes they were calling for him, because I felt like they were calling the same route for him too much.
Yeah, we're going to have to, you know, get him deeper into the playbook. But, you know, he's an emerging guy. You know, one thing that stood out to me, and we've talked about this on the podcast and just over the years, you know, as fans watching the game, you know, we get a turnover from Colorado State and immediately down the DeAndrew for a touchdown. I thought that was phenomenal play calling. And again, that was just a moment of we've been lethargic. And then this is really what we're capable of doing. And then we kind of went back to being lethargic. But that was just a moment of a perfect play call, aggressive action, score a touchdown. This is what we can do. We're just not doing it all day.
Oh, no, you're correct. And I would say even Coach Saban talked about in his coach's show about, you know, the fourth quarter was the one quarter that he was happy with, because, you know, you and I have talked for years about we want offenses to be able to take a strike at the 30 or 35 yard line, right? Mm-hmm. And we want our Alabama offense to be able to do that. And so we were at the 30 after the fumble. Great opportunity, first play, go for the throat. You need some momentum there because of you'd kind of let them just hang around. And I was glad it went to DeAndre White, because earlier in the game, AJ made a poor pass that was, you know, was kind of underthrown on that opening drive. And DeAndre went up and got it at its highest point. The ball was underthrown.
Sure.
Had he thrown the ball the way he should have, it would have been a touchdown, walked into the end zone. Instead, DeAndre stops. He goes up and gets it at his highest point. And I think if he doesn't do that, it's either definitely a deflection by the DB or definitely interception at midfield.
Yeah, you know, I agree. If he had put the ball in the right place, and that's not always going to happen, you know, but what you can do is put it up there and let your, you know, playmakers make plays. And DeAndre certainly did in that situation. And we went back to him. You know, when we threw the slant, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, the slant to Kenny Bell, you know, you mentioned, you know, that's the play call. That's what we need to do. We need to work in the slants. You know, I completely agree with that. I looked at the stat line for McCarron, and with the exception of the interception, I thought it was a very robo McCarron, you know, kind of a stamped out performance. He was 20 of 26, 258, one touchdown. You know, obviously, and he does not throw a lot of picks. So normally that stat line would be two touchdowns and no picks, but one touchdown, one pick. I think he's already met or surpassed his pick total for last year. No real big surprise there. You're not going to go another season with only three, but although that was a very McCarron-like performance with the exception of the INT.
Oh, sure. But when I called him out earlier, just to be clear, 20 of 26 is a little deceptive when you did so much dinking and dunking.
Well, it is. But, so, you know, he averaged nine, you know, almost 10 per attempt. And, you know, we took some strikes, a little dinking and dunking. We talked about during research or reading on this that, you know, McCarron's not as crisp in those intermediate routes. And so I think we saw some of that. You know, even at 20 for 26, you know, he could have cleaned up just a couple of things and, you know, and be 22 of 26 for, you know, closer to 300 and, you know, maybe another touchdown. So I think he still has some spring cleaning to do in his game. But I think we're going to get this type of performance out of him. Again, we're not going to get a pick every week. We'll get that second touchdown. But I think that can be a winning performance.
Okay. Well, I was definitely glad to see Chris Black get an opportunity there at the end of the game. I thought it was kind of funny that we bring in the backups there in garbage time with a couple minutes left. And of course it's Blake Sims, which frustrates the hell out of me, but we bring in Blake Sims and he throws the ball to Chris Black. And so Chris Black finishes with a touchdown. Just with everything we know he went through last year, I'm glad that we've seen him now. We made the comment in the stadium. We were like, man, you know, we hadn't even talked about him in the podcast year, you know, yet as far as the post games, because he hasn't been out there. And so I thought it was an interesting time to bring him into the game as opposed to earlier with Amari out and with Kevin Norwood out. You would have thought you would have saw Chris Black earlier in this ball game.
Yeah, and earlier in the season too, right? I mean, this is a guy that that we thought was going to come on and be a player. You know, you talk about the A-Day game a year ago where two players kind of flashed for you. You know, one was Yeldon, one was Chris Black, and so expecting him to just kind of, you know, burst onto the scenes, and it really hasn't appeared that he's done that. And there could be a lot of different reasons that we don't know, but we seemed to. It was almost as if the coaches looked up and said, "Oh, there's only a minute and a half left in the game. Let's do a wholesale change." Because, you know, I looked down and saw Leon Brown in there. We've got other backups, and then all of a sudden, you know, I was looking through the line and looking through the tables. We've got wholesale backups in there. Everyone's a backup, and then, you know, immediately Sims puts up a one play touchdown, 14 yards. It was really all Black. You know, the pass was really at or behind the line of scrimmage, but that certainly gives Sims an impressive stat line.
Oh, it does. But I the coaches talked after the game that they did want to get the younger guys in earlier in the game. So I don't know if they were just so frustrated with the play of the starters and was just into coaching them up that I think you said it best. I think they looked up and said, wait a minute, we got to hurry up and do this because next week's an SEC game and this game's almost over.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hey, what else jumped out at you on the offensive side of the ball? I thought it was funny that, you know, when Yeldon gets to come off the bench, he ran with some intensity on that 38-yard run from scrimmage to start the second quarter.
Yeah, he was, he was ready to demonstrate that he was ready to go. You know, certainly fresh legs at that point, I think, you know, probably had a role and probably a little fire under his rear end did as well. He came out, you know, ready to run and did really well there on that first run. Not a whole lot other than that. I thought that it was interesting that, you know, we gave the touchdown to Drake instead of Fowler in that situation. You think maybe the bigger back, but I think we gave it to Drake is sort of a clear indication that, you know, Yeldon, that would have been your touchdown, but we gave it to Drake. You know, he had to have some penalty, I guess, for sitting out the first quarter.
Oh, sure. Well, hey, the fact that we have not mentioned the offensive line yet, let me just say for the listeners, that's not a good thing. There just wasn't really anything flashy to talk about. I was not impressed across the board with the line.
Oh,
I felt like the false starts and, you know, the lack of concentration, you know, they keep saying they keep saying that it's communication and they're not getting the communication right. Well, you know, you're a quarter of the way into the season. When are you going to get the communication right? Go ahead.
I'll say this, and we talked about this the other night. Cyrus Kwanjo is playing like he wants to be on the Capstone campus again next year.
Yes, he is definitely playing like he for one more year. And you know, to be fair to these guys, we came into the season with three new offensive linemen. So with Kellen having to play, we had four offensive linemen, you know, that were different from last year's team. And so we need to acknowledge that. But I guess in light of the opponent, I just would have expected more.
I would have expected more, especially against this opponent, right? You know, we played against Virginia Tech. We played a very proficient defensive game. Against A&M, we played a very proficient offensive game. And I thought against Colorado State, we're going to see both of them. And so we're going to put it together. And then this sort of plants the flag on what this team can be for the rest of the season. Well, I think we planted the flag in our foot is what it, you know, is what it seems like. And I'm certainly hoping that this is not representative of what we have ahead of us, because if we do, you know, we may not make it out of next weekend without a loss. We'll get to that game, but that's just kind of how I feel about, you know, how we're playing. We're seeing flashes, but I'm just, there were injuries and there was a hangover from Texas A&M, the Ole Miss game next week. There were some suspensions. All of that can kind of conspire to sour mood in the locker room. I do think there's something to There's not very many players on this team that has suffered a meaningful loss. You know, certainly even at, you know, even at the starters, right? Because McCarron wasn't a starter. We think of him as a leader, and he is, you know, but he wasn't a full-time starter. We look at C.J. Mosley as a leader on the defense, and he wasn't a full-time starter. And so if you go back to the 2010, and you even look at the guys that are on the roster, I don't think there's anyone, and I'm kind of doing this on the fly, I honestly don't think there's anyone that played meaningful snaps. You know, you have a lot of guys that maybe that's their reason for just being lethargic, because someone that is not them has always stepped up. And that's not to say we haven't had guys on the team that haven't stepped up. You know, Yeldon has, and you know, a lot of the guys have. But because we have won two titles in the last 2 years, and so it's not like we're devoid of experience. But sometimes that negative experience is what resonates the most, and we don't have guys that have that experience.
No, that's true, and it's just building that cohesiveness and that chemistry. And I just don't think we have it yet.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me back to 2010 after they won the title in 2009, when you and I saw the video of Saban lighting into them at practice in August.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about, you know, there's a couple teams specifically out there. You know, he mentioned, I think it was LSU that year that had some shirts made up for Alabama.
Yep.
You know, he mentioned something about the South Carolina opponent coming up. And of course that was one of the other losses as well. And it's like these guys don't get the fact that they've got that bullseye on them each and every week. I think right now they think, or some of them might think, we can just show up and that's all we got to do.
Right.
And so I hope I'm wrong on that. I will say real quick before we get off the offense, I do want to mention Brandon Green.
Yeah.
And Brandon, I'm sorry I didn't mention this earlier, man. I just have to say we heard in summer ball, you know, with the number change, we heard that you were going to get worked in at tight end. We talked about in the pregame show why they were doing that with the loss of Michael Williams, et cetera. I've just been pleasantly surprised. He didn't get to play much in the first game, but to see him free tight end formation last week against Texas A&M, and you know, in this game we even saw our boy split out wide and run a 15-yard pass pattern. Man, he is I'm impressed.
That, you know, that was so awesome. I'm glad that you brought that up, because we would be wrong to miss that. You know, when he was splitting out, I thought, oh, we're going to get a huddle infraction because he's subbing out. You know, I mean, he's a 300-pound. He was an offensive tackle, right?
But he lined up in the, he even had the wide receiver pose, man.
Yeah,
set it up for
everybody. Split out wide and had the stance. He, you know, he was ready. And I thought, man, we're about to get a substitution penalty here. And no, he was going out wide to line up. And we've seen Vogler do that. And we think, well, you know, okay, it's not unusual to do that with a tight end. You know, maybe you can get a mismatch out there. And Vogler was known for his pass catching. Don't see, you know, a 300-pound tackle, you know, for all intents and purposes, split out wide. And I don't know if that was something that we did intentional. I don't know if that's something that we're running a play and didn't realize the personnel that we had out there. You know, it could have been accidental. But damn, it was pretty cool to see.
It was pretty cool. I'm holding out hope that we are planting a seed for something down the road this season with Mr. Green.
I don't even want to say it out loud because I don't want to jinx that. I'd love to see him. I'd love to see him rumbling after he gets those mitts on a ball. Hey, and unless you have something else you want to hit on offense, you know, who gets your mini game ball?
Man, mini game ball is tough, just because of the spirit of what we try to do, and so I'm gonna, if he can still qualify, I'm gonna have to give this to DeAndre White. He's overcome a lot of adversity, and I know he's headliner than mini game ball, but I just really like the way he's worked himself back into the lineup. And this is the second week in a row that he's made some really big plays. And he's also in there on opportunities to block when Christian Jones gets the ball thrown to him behind the line of scrimmage. We missed that when he got hurt last year because he is one of our physical blocking wide receivers. And so I just thought he had a pretty good ball game. I mean, all-purpose yards, he was second behind Christian Jones.
No, I love that, and I think that's a good pick. And DeAndre is someone that, you know, that we certainly tracked through his career. I think he, you know, maybe had some maturity issues, and we've talked about our opinion on those and drawing some suspensions. And last year when he seemed that he was kind of growing out of that, he suffers a season-ending, you know, knee injury, and feel really bad for him about that. And so this year he's come on, made some good plays Saturday. I think that's a fine performance, and I think that's a fine for the mini game ball. A little big for it, but I respect you know, all that goes behind that selection. I'm going, and again, you know, I tend to do this. I'm going for reasons already stated. OJ Howard. I think that we are intentional in going to him. I think we're trying to grow him up, and I think he's going to be I hesitate to say household name because, you know, that just becomes cliched. But I think for fans that are paying attention, he's gonna be a star player before the end of the season.
Well, you better go ahead and call him that now because mini game ball will not qualify in a few weeks. So you better go ahead and get that out of the way while he's still not a headliner.
Yeah, you're probably right. So I'm getting it out there while I can. Hey, before we flip the field to defense, I want to introduce our new sponsor, secbias.com. There's a lot of chat boards out there. They have, team rooms for all teams within the conference. You get to interact with folks from every different team, which is a lot of fun, and game weeks leading up to a specific contest. But secbias.com. Look for us on that podcast, username Alabama, or on that chat room, username Alabama Football Podcast. So you'll clearly know that it's us, and we're out there chatting with folks. So go to secbias.com for some of the interaction there. Tom, let's flip the field to defense. What'd you see on defense?
Man, I'm just going to go ahead and start with the headliner, so I don't offend and get this out of the way. Man, I am so excited that Landon Collins committed to the University of Alabama. There's a lot of players we've talked about that we're happy about. But, man, when you talk about the light clicking on or the switch and just playing with a different level of intensity.
No, Collins is, you know, and he's really flashing on special teams, but he's getting out there in the nick, especially in the dime position. He's the starter at the money, but you know, he's getting some more run as well. He's a very enthusiastic player. He plays with a lot of energy, a lot of motivation. He is a big safety. I mean, he could, you know, he is as big or bigger than some linebackers. I think A&M's biggest linebacker was, you know, 215, and I think Landon Collins goes that easy. I think that I agree. This is another dude. You kind of put the brackets around him as a star, plays with a lot of enthusiasm, and he's just a heck of a lot of fun to watch.
Well, he is. And just like you said, on, you know, we'll get to special teams in a minute, but on the defensive side of the ball, we are working him at the line of scrimmage. You know, we're not putting back part of the field, which I think he could do just fine.
Yes.
I'm, you know, we can talk about that in just a minute, but we're putting him more in those first 5 yards at the line of scrimmage. He was shadowing Johnny Manziel a lot and made some big plays on him last week. And this week he's the perfect fit for Nick Saban's scheme because he's big enough and physical enough that he can cover the tight ends. But then his size really gives problems coming off the edges. And so I look forward to, as he becomes more comfortable in the role, seeing him maybe blitz some from the edge. I'd like to see him cause some chaos there in the backfield.
Yeah, you know, and we've talked about, part of the part of the genius or part of the scheme that Saban runs is to put players out there and give them small responsibilities, but we start with sort of a single serving and then sort of grow them into the full menu. And I think that's where Landon is. I think that he's going to grow into that full menu, and we're going to see him do things like blitzes. And I want to just kind of call out, he had four tackles and a couple of those on special teams. What really stood out to me in his stat line, and it's almost like I want to go back and watch the game and find these, because I don't remember all of them, but he had three pass breakups. That's pretty darn impressive.
It is. And I think it was really toward the second half of the game. And our friend Eric in the stands with us even made this comment when we were talking about it. He now seems comfortable with making a play on the ball.
Yes.
And so he wasn't doing that in the first couple games, but those pass deflections was because he was going to make a play and try to intercept the ball. And I think you're going to see him get one here in the next week or so.
No, and I think that's a critical point. I want to just kind of clarify that. And because a lot of people may say, well, of course you make a play on the ball. Why would you not? Well, it's pretty simple. You might forego making the play on the ball so that you can make a play on the receiver. And so the receiver catches the ball and you can tackle the receiver to the ground. And there's a 100% chance that you can do that if you're in the right position. However, if you go to make a play on the ball, in some respects, you're leaving the receiver. And so if you go to full out swat at the ball and you miss the ball, the receiver can catch it and then he can make a play and
he's gone,
and then you have the opportunity to look silly. And so the more conservative play is to play the receiver. But when you have the confidence that this is a ball that I can get to, and you can exercise the discretion of that's a ball I can get to, this is not a ball I can get to. And so you have the opportunity to toggle between where am I going to try to make the play, on the receiver or the ball, and you can show that and demonstrate that discretion. And hey, you'd love to have a touchdown, obviously, but then you'd rather have a pass breakup over a tackled receiver at the point of catch.
No, you would. And this is a good opportunity just to work in the Texas A&M game. It was actually by a gentleman by the name of Jeff Tarpley, who writes for AggieYell.com. And I told you about this, and we haven't had a chance to show this to you, but this was an article that he wrote about Alabama's pattern match defense. And he was talking about the different schemes that we run in the secondary. And he was talking about whether, that the predominant thing that we do is a one-man free look or one deep safety with zone principles. And the thing that I found so interesting about this is he was just calling our defense pattern reading and basically talking about how Nick Saban allows the defensive backs to watch the receivers and defend the routes rather than the receivers.
Yep.
Because if you read a route, you can often tell what the other routes are going to be. And so I only want to mention this real quick because I think Landon Collins is getting better at reading the routes. His responsibility, like Vinny, is the slot receiver. And so what this guy mentioned in the article is that the corners are having the outside guy, right? And the nickelback or the safeties are having the slot guy. And so I think Landon is finally getting comfortable with anticipating what that route is going to be based on what the other receivers on the field are doing. So now he can make a play on the ball.
Yeah, and that's fair. And what I'll try to do is I'll try to find that article and link it in our show notes. We did link an article in the pregame that talked about it actually talked to pattern matching in some of the schemes there. And so we'll get this one from Yell. And then if you want to go to the A&M pregame show, if you haven't looked at that, there's a really good article there that talks about the pattern match scheme as well. So we'll have a couple articles about that available to you. We started with Landon Collins just because of what he represents. One of the topics I want to lead with is our cornerback play. And we actually had, Deion, the starters at corner, right, were Deion Blue, who was out with a turf toe that he suffered last week. and John Fulton, who played, but you know, clearly was down in the pecking order. And we called this early in the pregame, and we called it early in some of our earlier shows. Look for opportunities against teams like Colorado State, where we play a lot of young corners early. Let's find out who they are and how they play, because those are going to be the cornerbacks of the future. And in fact, they may be cornerbacks of the present, at least as the season unfolds. And so we played six different players at cornerback, and we started with Sylvie and Eddie Jackson. We played Fulton did play later. Cyrus Jones played. Maurice Smith and Gino played some as well. And so a couple things there that really stand out to me, right? You know, Sylvie, as a sophomore, got his first start. Eddie Jackson, you know, freshman Eddie Jackson got his first start of his career. Maurice Smith got his first play of his career. Gino, who was suspended for the first game, it was not just coach speak when Saban said he's going to have to earn his place back in the roster, because he did not play very much against A&M, which was surprising to me. Jarek maintained the star position. I thought that he would, you know, day one back, that he would be reinstalled as the starter. That was not the case. We didn't see Jarek play at all. He had a little bit of an injury, and so you wonder how much Gino would have played if Jarek had been there. Cyrus played. He got some run. And Fulton was maybe the out of the six that we played, he was either the fifth or sixth cornerback to see the field. Now, we'll find out next week against Ole Miss who really the coaches think our starters are. I don't know that we roll out Sylvie and Eddie, you know, freshman Eddie Jackson against, you know, an SEC conference opponent. But I don't know if Blue's going to be back, too, because that's, a turf toe can be a significant injury. So I don't know what to make of our corner position. We've got players, but I don't think that we have a pair of cornerbacks and a star that I feel really comfortable with. What do you think?
Well, I agree with you. And I think what we decided to do with this rotation was they were sending a message to Fulton, because Fulton was lost in the Texas A&M game. We did not get to talk about this on the on a show, but he was not making a play on the ball. He did not know where the ball was in a couple different situations. And so we clearly started with Sylvie and Eddie Jackson, which is interesting, right? Because we could have started with, you know, well, I guess because we played Cyrus and Fulton, okay? And Cyrus did make the interception in the end zone, right? Which was a good play on the ball.
Sure.
The reason I bring that up is because He got beat once, but once again, being thrown into the fire, he got better as the game wore on. And so I am surprised he wasn't one of the two guys out there. I'm not surprised John Fulton didn't start the game, but I'm curious why Sylvie and Jackson, why that combination was used. And then we did Maurice Smith and Cyrus to start the second quarter. So it's like each cornerback was getting a quarter under their belt. And then John Fulton came out to start the second half. And you and I even talked about it in the game. We said John Fulton was the only one that stayed out there into the fourth quarter. So John Fulton didn't get to start the game, but he got to play the third and the fourth quarter. So it was a very interesting, like a game within the game. It was interesting why he did it that way.
Do you think that, and so maybe talk me over the ledge or maybe push me over, do you think John Fulton was being held out to kind of teach him a lesson, or do you think he was being held out because, you know what, these guys might actually be better than you?
I think he was being held out. I think he didn't get started. He didn't start the game, I think, to send a message. And then I think Nick Saban said, you know what? You and I said after the Texas A&M game, we said, guess what? Which freshman are we going to pull the red shirt off of? Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting, out of the three cornerbacks we signed, two of them got the red shirt pulled off in this ball game. And so I think he was giving open auditions. You used to kid about giving open auditions on the quad for a field goal kicker when we didn't have one.
Yep.
Open auditions at the cornerback position. And he was basically saying, look, who wants Fulton's job? Raise your hand. I'm taking numbers. Who wants Fulton's job? And I think it was an open audition to see who could take his job. And then he brought him in the third quarter and said, okay, show me I'm wrong. Show me that you want it bad enough. And I don't know that he showed him.
I didn't see anything necessarily that, you know, that really sold me on him. I'm still, you know, flustered that, you know, and it's a it's a turf toe, which really,
yes,
really frustrates me because, you know, that's what Deion Ballou has.
Which makes you wonder about Ballou. Correct.
It was a turf toe that kept John Fulton out of spring.
Yes.
And you think,
so how does Ballou come back after one game?
So how does, yeah. And so, and that's kind of interwoven, right? Because we entered the season, me being suspect on Fulton, because we didn't get to see him in spring and he didn't get those reps, and those are reps he needed. I don't care that he's a senior. Those are reps that he needed. And so the fact that he's in there now, I don't know. I still don't know how good he is. He's had flashes, but he's had, you know, flashes the other way too. How long is Ballou out? I just don't know. And so I've got, you know, two more things on the cornerback, and then you can relieve me and move us to another position. But we played, you know, so Geno, we wanted to find the corner opposite Geno or opposite Ballou so that Geno could play the star position. And so he was suspended, and Jarek apparently is playing well in that position. Geno strikes me as potentially still being in the doghouse, in Saban's doghouse.
Yes. As
we came out against this team and played a lot of, and again, this is the whole thing about what you and I call base versus what Saban calls base. We came out in what I have started to term the Saban base, which is, you know, a true 3-4 with these as opposed to a nickel package. And we played a lot of the Saban base. And it reached a point where I wondered, are we purposely playing with four DBs to keep Geno off the field? Are we purposely doing that so that we don't have to play the star position and put the guy out there that's still in my doghouse?
Man, that's reaching a little bit.
Is it? Okay.
No, I mean, I like where you're going with that, but because it's not like Colorado State played a traditional power eye, right, two tight end type of defense that would have dictated just four DBs, right? They had a lot of three wides. I mean, they started the game with three wide receivers. And so to your point, you thought you would have seen more nickel and dime based on the type of offense that Colorado were in.
Well, that, and you know, you've got Nick Perry out, you've got Jarek out, you know, Fulton, you know, apparently we're going to, you know, ride the bench with him. And so we're starting, you know, Sylvie and Eddie and freshman Eddie Jackson. We're going to play, you know, Mari Smith, who's a freshman as well. At some point you think, you know, this could go two ways, right? You say, well, we're so banged up at DB that we're going to play fewer of them so that we can get some rotation. Okay, well, then that makes sense. But you also say we're going to play freshmen and we're going to play guys that have never started before. We're gonna err on the side of having more DBs in there for the sake of coverage and backside protection. And so we're going to run some nickel and some dime. And we did run nickel and we did run some dime. But you would think that if I'm going to have all these freshmen out here, I'm going to err on the side of running some more nickel and some more dime so I can
give them help.
I can get Ha Ha and Landon and Vinny out there with these other guys helping. I can get Geno out there with these other guys helping. And we saw a number of times where Vinny was coaching up and positioning some of the DBs, and Ha Ha was coaching up and positioning some of the DBs. And so you think, well, if you have more DBs out there, then you get more of that, and you define more precisely what the responsibilities are of some of the younger guys. That's, you know, that's my only thing on that. It'll be very interesting, and it's so frustrating. It's our fourth game. We had a bye already. So next week will be the fifth week of the season. And I could not tell you who's going to start in our defensive backfield. That is very unsettling for me.
No, it is. And to speak to what you said, there was even a couple times where I pointed to you that when Brad Sylvie was in the game, that he was trying to communicate to Ha Ha or HaHa was trying to communicate to him. Regardless, he wasn't settled with what his responsibility was supposed to be pre-snap.
Right.
And one time, you know, they literally threw a screen out to him in the flats, and the guy came out on him to block him. He wasn't even looking at the ball because he didn't know the ball had been snapped.
Yeah, he was still confirming his assignment, looking back to the safety, and the blocker was able to get just right on him when he had his head turned, and he was rendered, you know, ineffective.
Absolutely. And so to go back to your question to me, do we have two starting corners? You know, I'm going to answer your question by saying not no, but hell no.
Yeah.
And what has been the stable for Alabama defenses has been not only two corners, but having three starting corners. And so I would say at this point in time, my concern with Blue is we're not going to see him against Ole Miss. They can say he ran through some drills in the 5-minute media viewing period. It's going to be a few weeks. And so I'm going to tell you that I bet you who we see on when we start against Ole Miss, I bet you we see Eddie Jackson and Cyrus Jones. And so that's the two starting corners that I bet you we see. So back to your point, we don't have three starting corners. We have probably one SEC caliber comfortable with starter right now, and that's Geno Smith, who I still think is in the doghouse.
Yeah, and you know, and for all the high praise that I have heaped on Geno, his experience is at the star, not at a boundary or field corner position. And I'm not saying he can't do that, but you know, I was excited about excited about finding the opposite corner so that he could continue to play star. And so now he's in the doghouse, and now it just seems like, you know, we don't have enough of the right people to play these corners. And so a Sylvie, who's a redshirt sophomore, you know, freshman Eddie Jackson and Maurice Smith, also a freshman. And Cyrus, I don't want to skip over Cyrus.
Right.
But, you know, he's a sophomore, and this is his first year playing, you know, at the collegiate level playing cornerback. And so, man, we have a lot of youth.
This is not the experience we're used to. This is not the experience these Alabama teams are used to by any means. And before we jump off of this real quick, we've got to touch on something else you and I were hammering in the football game while we're in the secondary. And this is just the play of the safeties. And I wish that I could just pick up the phone and call Kirby Smart, and I wish he would take my call and knew who I was, because we called it in the Texas A&M game that, you know, on that big 98-yard pass play that HaHa had purposely at the line of scrimmage, 3rd and 8, he had ran up to take the running back in the flats in the end zone. He had Vinny's responsibility was float over to the middle of the field between the hashes and play center field back where he should be, doesn't have the angle right, touchdown. My point is that why do we keep putting Vinny in the back of the defense? You and I talked about this yet again. I like Vinny as a playmaker at the line of scrimmage. You know, I like what he did when he blitzed the quarterback, jumped up in this game, deflected the ball, could have even had a pick, but got a sack. I mean, he's a great playmaker at the line of scrimmage, but why do we keep putting him 20 yards off the ball?
You know, I don't know. The only thing that I can come up with is that he knows how to play the position. You know, it's, you know, there have been players that we've asked, you know, why are they on the field? There's more gifted and athletic, you know, player, you know, Corey Reamer, right? You know, kind of the classic example, you know. What is he doing to get on the field? Rel Harris not doing to keep him, you know, from playing. And so you wonder if at that single high safety, you've got a high school linebacker playing single high safety. Whereas if you compare him to HaHa Clinton Dix, where there were some teams that were recruiting him as a cornerback, and you think, God, that is what would have been a huge cornerback is perfect for free safety, not a converted high school linebacker. And you think, what's happening there? And so does Vinny, who's very instinctual, I like to say he speaks the language of football, coach's son. Does he just know? And I think he's the captain of the defense, and I think he calls some of the defensive, some of the back end, you know, plays. Does he just know it so well that that's where we have to put him?
Is he Will Lowry.
Yeah, there you go. And that's a defensive, you know, back analogy. Is he the guy that's out there because he knows how to play? And again, he doesn't have the athleticism and the physical gifts to actually do it,
but right,
he knows on a play everyone's responsibilities. And so let's put him on the field where he can survey the entire field and make sure that everyone's lined up. When you put him at the line of scrimmage,
he can't do
he
that.
He can't survey. But back in the back end, he can. And now, look, I don't know if that's grasping for straws or if there's something to it. I think that's the answer that the coaches might give, because they like to answer in positives for the player that they're talking about as opposed to negatives to the players they're not talking about. And so they're going to say, well, this other guy's athletic, but he's not smart enough to pick up the full scheme versus,
right,
you know, he's a coach on the field and in person event. And so I don't know that to be true, but for the life of me, I can't think of anything else that makes sense.
Right. Well, I just was curious because you and I have talked about this numerous times, and I think that, you know, that when you put him back there in space in the center field position, I think you just expose yourself, and I think teams are starting to, if they haven't already realized it, they're looking for him in those situations. And so when we have put him against slot receivers like we did against Texas A&M, and he had to cover him in a, you know, at the 20-yard line, and the receiver can cross his body on a post route and score a touchdown against Texas A&M, you know, he had no chance there. And right. So my point is that when we put him in those situations, you know, I just want to ask why yeah. do we keep doing that? That's yeah. all.
What else stood out to you?
Well, I like the fact that, you know, regardless of why we started the game with four DBs, you know, we've been starting the game with five DBs for the previous two games. It gave Denzel Duvall a chance to get his first start, you know, his quote unquote, be a starter on the field at the first snap. Yep. And so you and I talked about in the rotation that it was interesting how we were playing that. And he seems to, while they haven't called it as such, Xavier Dixon seems to be spending most of his time at the line of scrimmage, and Denzel Duvall is the one that is getting to work in space, and he seems to be seizing his opportunity.
Yeah, I agree, and let's call out the sort of the roster jockey, you know, that we've noticed there as well in the Saban base, the true 3-4 that we played some against Virginia Tech. Tana Patrick was getting the starting spots, you know, the quote unquote starting spot or the number one spot at that linebacker position. And we actually saw very little of Tana outside of special teams this week. And so it seems that the Denzel took over that position, the true 3-4, that starting linebacker spot, which only increases the opportunity for him to get reps. Now, he was not very productive on Saturday. I think he had a tackle, maybe two, but I like having him on the field, and I want him on the field as often as we can get him there.
Oh, absolutely. what did you I guess one other thing I want to point out, if people might have missed it, is how we're working Ryan Anderson into the scheme.
Yep.
You and I talked about this at Texas A&M. We saw his first meaningful snaps as a rush end on obvious passing downs. And he seems to be an effective pass rusher off the edge there. And so while we haven't seen him, you know, really playing at the true linebacker position, you know, it goes back to compartmentalizing.
Yes.
And it goes back to what you said about Landon Collins. And it goes back to building confidence and working them into the scheme gradually. And that seems to be where Ryan is getting his first entree onto the field.
Yeah, it's almost the Eric Anders rabbit rusher role. And you think, well, Eric Anders is another guy that, you know, how is he beating out some of the other guys? And it's just in a compartmentalized role, he was able to. And had some athleticism there. And Ryan Anderson seems to be playing well in that role. He did last week against A&M. He certainly got some run and some opportunity there against Colorado State. So I think that we're going to see more and more of him in that position. You know, talking about talking about young players, and again, young guys getting opportunities and growing. You know, you can almost plot snaps and production across the first three games. But A'shaun Robinson, you know, came in true freshman, you know, 4 or 5 star out of Texas. You know, Summit knows. We would go to a more of a 2 defensive tackle with a defensive end and a walk-up linebacker, kind of a 4-man front. And he actually got some snaps at end, you know, at a 300-pound end. That's pretty impressive. But, you know, he had a sack on Saturday. He had a sack last week against A&M. And I think I read this stat correctly. We have 3 sacks on the season, and dude has 2 of the 3.
Well, he is what I think Saban. Well, there's 2 things I'll say here. First of all, Brandon Ivory has done more than I expected him to. Ivory has not made the you know, he has not pushed the guy, he has not pushed the pocket back at the line of scrimmage the way a Jesse Williams was doing. But he has held his own so far, better than I thought he would do. And so I like the fact that we have worked Robinson at some end, especially when we lost Dalvin Tomlinson.
Yes.
Because Dalvin Tomlinson was giving us some depth there at end. And so you and I talked early in the season about what was going to happen to Pagan. Was Pagan going to have to play inside, or was Pagan going to be able to play outside? Well, so far, the rotation at the interior lineman position with Darren Lake and with Brandon Ivory and with some Robinson has allowed people like Pagan to stay at the position that they're really good at. And so it's almost like we're grooming Robinson. And well, so that's such a key for Nick Saban's defenses.
Well, I like his versatility. If he can play at the nose and, you know, look, he's got the size that he can play at the nose. If he can play at the nose, if he can get some run at the end, I think that's important. I think he provides us the opportunity to go 2 defensive tackles. And I would not be surprised. Ivory's bigger, you know, weight wise, but in terms of proportion and carrying the weight well, I think, you know, you kind of got to give that edge to A'shaun. I would not be surprised if part of the hustle that we're seeing out of Ivory, now he's lost a lot of weight and he's remade his you know, figure as well. But I think some of the hustle that we're seeing out of him, and we called out a couple of plays watching the game where, you know, he was getting to the outside and you know, trying to participate in some plays that were really outside of the what you would expect a nose guard to do. You know, part of that's his improved capabilities. Part of it, I think, is A'shaun sniffing around his playing time. And I would not be surprised if we don't reach a point in the season where A'shaun is really getting more of the reps, maybe even some starter reps, and we start to see a guy like Jonathan Allen step in for some of the opportunity that Dalvin Tomlinson would have had. I would not at all be surprised to see some of that. And in fact, you mentioned Darren Lake, and he's a guy that I still find intriguing. I didn't count his snaps, but I only recall once or twice that I even, you know, sort of, you know, made reference or identified that he was on the field. And I think his production stats were pretty low. And Corey, Corin Kervin was a guy that I thought was going to come on. And I don't think I've seen him on the field at all season. So I think a lot of that goes to, you know, we thought we had numbers at the position and numbers would be our strength at the nose guard position. I think A'shaun Robinson may be our strength at that position before the season.
We definitely have participation from some of these other guys that we expected. That's for right. Sure.
And just to underscore that, you know, A'shaun's a true freshman and all of the other guys have been around.
Yes.
You know, at least redshirt freshman.
Yes.
You know, Lake played last year, so he's a sophomore. You know, Ivory's a junior. I think he's a redshirt junior at that. And Corin Kervin is a redshirt freshman. And so, you know, he's asking if he can get a second redshirt, I think is what he's doing. Because A'shaun is really stepped up. And, you know, I think he's going to be a performer for us. He's another guy that I kind of put the check mark by and say, yep, this guy is going to be another star that we're all going to like.
Hey, real quick before we jump off defense, were you surprised that we – well, you were surprised because you called it. I just wanted you to mention it to the listeners. How do you like burning the Tim Williams red shirt like that?
Yeah, surprised by that. He was in on the last – kind of the last tackle and probably had caught a couple snaps. I don't think he had played up until this point. In fact, I know he hadn't played up until this point. So late in the fourth quarter of a game against Colorado State, where the game's already in hand, you take a guy that I'd forecasted for redshirt. When I looked at all of the freshman linebackers and defensive ends and, you know, linemen that were coming in, he was the one that looked that looked the most like he could, you know, use a year. He's tall, he's lanky, he's rangy. And I think the opportunity, you know, he has the opportunity to put on 20-25 pounds and really grow into a player. But he's not a player I expected to see this season. And so in a game where we didn't need him to contribute, he comes in and burns that red shirt. A little bit surprised by that. So, you know, 54 Tim Williams, we'll have to keep an eye on if he doesn't. You know, the coaches aren't stupid, and we talk about their roster management and some of the tactics that they use. There must be something that he's demonstrating that in practice that they want to get on the field, and he's getting on the field ahead of a D-liner who has been redshirted, or, you know, apparently to this point has been redshirted, and some other guys that we thought maybe would come in and get some run early. So, you know, that's just something to watch. Apparently, we're going to put him in there, so we'll see how he does.
Hey, what? Anything else on defense before we call out some players there?
You know, Mosley had 9 tackles, and
very quiet nine tackles.
And I want to call out Adrian Hubbard. There was he was hustling. He made a couple of plays. There was one play, and we went. You know, they showed it on the scoreboard, and we got to watch it again. But he was engaged with. It looked like maybe the tight end, and the play was to his side. And so he was engaged. He was on the guy that's got him locked up, but watched the play coming as it was coming towards him. And he was able to basically stay engaged because he couldn't just shed the guy, stay engaged and wrap up the runner. And at one point he had his arms around two people, the guy trying to block him and the guy that he was trying to tackle. Yes. And then he got some help to, you know, support the play, but that's just a phenomenal effort play. And so I think he gets kind of a shout out for that.
Okay. Well, who's your mini game ball on defense go to?
Well, you know what? I'm gonna pull a Tommy and kind of break the rules on this one. I'm going a trio of freshmen.
Wow.
I'm giving it to A'shaun Robinson. We just talked about him. Freshman Eddie Jackson, and number 4 on the defense. You know, we watched him and said, you know, that guy, he's pretty good size for a cornerback. And so I looked up. He's 6 foot.
That's got to be wrong. Media relations had to screw that one up. There's no way he's 6 foot, man.
Well, he's 6 foot, 175, and I'm also giving it to Maurice, or I'm going to start calling him Mo Smith, another freshman cornerback. He's 6 foot, 180. So those guys are built pretty much the same. And 6 foot's tall for a cornerback. So I think those guys maybe have an opportunity to blossom. So, you know, Eddie got the nod as a starter. Mo, I thought, played well. A'shaun, I think, is going to be a star. We may have 3 guys right there that I'm not ready to forecast the 2 corners, but the fact that they were out there, I've got my – maybe I'm gumping a little bit here, but, those 3 guys may be some studs for us down the road.
Okay. Well, definitely at this point, we've got open competition, and it's just trying to find who is going to be that second. I definitely think we have that, which is very unusual for an Alabama football team under Coach Saban. The as far as my mini game ball on defense, you know, you've kind of stole my thunder a little bit with A'shaun Robinson, because I really wanted to give it to him. But I also think that, you know, just as deserving of that has got to be Denzel Duvall. He did not make a big sack. He did not make a big tackle for loss, but he was setting the edge. He was where he was supposed to be. He was being substituted several times for rushing on the end, covering the right running back in the slot, covering the tight end in space. He was doing several different things for his first start. And, you know, maybe I'm just a softy because he got his first start and he's such a hustler, and we talk so much about him in the preseason. But
I you know, I cannot get enough Denzel Duval. Every chance that we have to get him on the field is a chance to make me happy. And so if he gets more run and more opportunity, then I'm certainly pleased, you know, to experience that. What do you got on special teams?
Man, special teams, I have to start by just going back to our preseason where we talked about, you know, our field goal kicking. And we talked about the fact of now that we're sitting in a situation where we are going to have to rely on Cade Foster to be the guy, or was Cade Foster going to be the guy, or was he going to have to compete for both the short and the long field goals? You know, you said at the beginning of the season, is our play calling going to be different around that part of the field, because we don't want to put him in a position where he's got to kick the 40 to 50 yarder. Well, they even called it on TV. From 40 to 50 yards last year, he was 1 of 4. And, you know, he missed one and he made one. And they were both 46-yard field goals. And so I went back and I looked at the tape and I said, okay, let me see where he was on the field from the vantage point of the TV cameras. And so on the first field goal, he's on the far hash and he hooks it, right? Well, then on the very next kick, he's on the other hash and he kicks it straight as it can be, and he almost misses it to the other upright. And so my point of mentioning that is that it's like he doesn't know where he is on the field and how he needs to adjust his plant foot based on where he is on the hash or whether he's in the center of the field when he kicks a field goal.
Yeah, I know
that sounds crazy. It's not like you and I are experts at field goal kick. It seems like he kicks the ball the same way every time, regardless of where he is lining up to kick the field goal. I'll say it that way.
Yeah, he is a strong leg, and that's you know, there's no precision to really what he does. He just gets up there and wallops it, and he swings that leg and wallops it, and he's not very accurate. You know, like you said, right at the same distance, he barely made one, just over the crossbar, and he missed one pretty bad. It's a terrifying option if we need to line up and hit a 35-yarder to win a game. In the way that we're playing, you know, at the beginning of the season, you know, it was all kind of, you know, lipstick and lollipops, and everything's exciting, and we're going to kick everybody's ass by 20 points and just really excited about it. And, you know, a couple games, maybe we're not that good, or maybe we need to, you know, maybe there's other things going on. And in the meantime, we might need to kick a field goal to win a game. Oh man, that scares me.
Well, it makes you wonder why we didn't see Adam Griffith take one of those two attempts. Does it surprise you?
I think if there had been a third one, that maybe we would have done it. Because one thing you want to be careful of, and it's not like I'm a coach and I'm an expert here, but you don't want him to go out there and miss badly and then yank him. Because you know, kickers are weird. You know, you don't want to. You don't want to take their ice cream away from them. You don't want to, you know, kind of crush their spirit. And so go out there, son, and let's try to kick another one. Let's get you some confidence. Let's give you a pat on the back after you make it. And then, you know, something that we can build on and improve. I think if we had a third one, then you could say, hey, now we're going to try out this. But man, you made that last one. We're really pleased with what you're doing for us. I think there's a little bit of psychology at work there.
Well, I guess I have to be happy that we were in a position to try one against the Colorado State, right? Because we didn't get to see the opportunity of what we had against Texas A&M. So I guess I have to at least be glad we were in a position to try one.
yeah, it was kind of, you know, we're three games in, we haven't tried to kick a field goal. You could argue that's telling in and of itself.
Yes.
I don't want to talk about Kate a lot because I don't want to be too harsh on our players, but, which I guess is harsh to say that.
It's just a valid point, right? We are four games into the season counting the bye week, right?
So, you know, that could, you know, some of that's very situational. There hasn't been really a natural opportunity where we would kick a field goal. You know, the opportunity that we had against, you know, what would have been a field goal against Texas A&M is, you know, if when we passed the ball to Fowler to score the touchdown, I think we were going to run the ball there with the understanding that we're just going to run it up the middle. If we get a touchdown, great. Otherwise, we'll kick a field goal. That would have been a meaningful field goal because that would have been, you know, for a two-score, you know, or a two-possession. That would have made it a two-possession ball game, which was significant, right? Because they came back and scored they got to 42, right?
Yes.
And so if we had not scored that touchdown to get to 49, and, you know, think about that onside kick. Going for that onside kick, if we at that point really only had a 3-point lead, that would have been a meaningful kick. And so you think, hey, AJ wants to run this play. Yeah, let's give it a shot because otherwise we may, you know, be kicking the ball here. So, you know, it may have been easier to agree with the quarterback seeing something and calling the play because of what maybe the alternative was. Because maybe we're just going to run a dive to keep the ball straight.
Yeah, no, that's true. I just meant that at this point, right, it makes you uneasy that you haven't tried a field goal yet in the season. You finally do, and you're one of two. That's all, regardless of who the kicker is.
Yeah,
it just makes me nervous.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about Landon Collins. You know, it's kind of like when Vinny first hit the scene, right? Vinny was always the ones flying to the ball and making the plays on the kickoffs, and now Landon – you know, Vinny's still there and Vinny's still getting his fair share, but it seemed like every time I looked up in the game, number 26 was always the one getting up over the ball carrier.
Yeah, and I think he has more upside on defense. And, you know, I know you agree with that. We don't have to expound. Hey, I just want to give a shout out and is, you know, he continues to perform, and so we want to continue to call him out. But, you know, Mandel, man, he had a 45-yard average. You know, again, which that seems to be his, you know, again, he's just stamping out 45 yard average games. But he did that with two touchbacks. You know, one we attempted to do, you know, kind of a coffin corner situation. I think he placed it perfectly and it had some roll and some bounce. Just the man down the field.
Just didn't know where the ball was.
The ball was. And I even said, and look, longtime listeners will understand the significance of me saying this. He showed a Brad Wing-like capability in doing that because the ball was so perfectly placed, had a couple of slow tumbles that's perfectly designed for a player to get down there and down it on the, you know, on the two, which is really what you're after in a situation like that. And, you know, guy was kind of looking, find the ball, and it, you know, it dribbles into the end zone, and you think, that's a little disappointing. But, you know, that's not a knock on the punter because the punter did his job in that situation. So we continue to see him perform, and as long as he does, we're going to mention it.
Hey, one other quick thing, and I agree with that. He has definitely given us the consistency that we need at the punting position. I just wanted to mention just general special teams in general because, you know, it's been a long time since we could sit here at this point in the season and say we've had a punt return for a touchdown, a kickoff return for a touchdown, and now a block punt for a touchdown. You know, you would think our special teams coach used to be at Virginia Tech. I'm really impressed with right now, while this team hasn't put it all together, we keep getting scores in ways that typical Alabama teams just don't get. And so Dylan Lee, to his credit, he was in the right place at the right time. He got his second touchdown as an Alabama player, which for a defensive player to say that is fun. As you called it in the game, Drake's the one that blocked it, but three guys could have blocked that punt because three guys was sitting there on his front toe.
Yeah.
And so I just want to give a shout out in general to special teams because we're making big plays that are very meaningful this team right now. When we look back at the end of the season, we never know how big this was for them.
it was phenomenal. And we've played three games and we've gotten three touchdowns, you know, two against Vatek, but we've gotten three touchdowns on special teams. And then we've gotten, you know, two touchdowns on interception returns for touchdowns. So, you know, I was just kind of doing the math in my head. We've scored 35 points this season non-offensively. That's a lot of lot of points, right? That's as many as we scored against Vatek, and that's, you know, more than we scored Saturday against you know, Colorado State. 35 points is a lot. That's 10 a game. It's more than 10 a game.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, Christian Jones just continues to operate you know, pretty well. He had he averaged 7 yards per punt and 23 per kickoff. Once or twice it looked like he might, you know, get away. He makes the first guy miss and the crowd kind of goes, you know, crazy with expectation, which is fun. You know, if he keeps that up, he's going to break another one or two before the year's out.
Okay.
Let's look at next week. We've got Ole Miss Rebels coming to town. It's a little quirk of the schedule. We added the two new teams last year, and we're kind of doing some schedule quirkiness. We get Ole Miss at home in back-to-back seasons, so that's kind of interesting. Frankly, I'm kind of glad, given how we're playing right now. How do you see this game playing out?
Man, I remember like it was yesterday when we played Ole Miss last year, that just how many times they threw the ball to the sideline behind the line of scrimmage with two wide receivers in front blocking, and how they kept consistently getting 6 or 7 yards to set them up in a second and short.
Yep.
And so, you know, as you sit there and mentioned a minute ago, do we even have two starting corners? And Alabama's used to having three. Dude, think about this. We might not have a Deion Blue. We might be sitting here with freshman corners against this Hugh Freeze offense that puts all kind of stress on the edges. You know, this might be a shootout again.
Yeah, I'm actually, you know, kind of, you know what? I am nervous about this game because, you know, Colorado State, you know, performed pretty well using the screen. And that used to be something that we used to blow up pretty well. We struggled against it with Colorado State and Ole Miss. Like you said, we're going to see a lot of it. And we just don't have, you know, Milliner last year was a player I think we really miss. He was a corner that could certainly drop back in coverage, but he was a physical player too. And he would attack and blow up a screen. You know, if for reasons we've talked about, we have to have Vinny in a too high safety look, or a yes, you know, single safety deep look, then he's not down there to blow up screens. And that's something that he can do pretty well. And so we have him doing what we need him to do, which takes him out of position to do what we also need him to do.
Yes.
Those kinds of things. So it'll be very interesting to see how we line up. I think we're going to see, and I hesitate to even call it a nickel or a dime because I don't know what kind of formation that we're going to look, but we're going to see a lot more Landon Collins on the field up near the line of scrimmage. And I would like it if we could more Nick Perry coming back healthy, and maybe it's Jarrett coming back healthy, and maybe that really does something different for our defensive backfield versus what we saw Saturday, because they're experienced guys. I don't know, and maybe I'm kind of grasping at straws. I am nervous about this game because the way, you know, they played us last year, they're coming in and they're wanting to kind of earn their stripes like A&M did last year. They're wanting to kind of make a name for themselves and have a trophy or signature win. That's what they're hunting. And I don't know that we're wounded necessarily, but we're not 100%. And this is again, a couple of weeks ago, I would have laughed at myself for saying this, but here we are, right, with new information. This is a game I'm a little bit nervous about.
Well, this is a team, right, that is coming off a bye week. So they're going to have 2 weeks to prepare for us. Their last opponent, you know, they went and they beat, you know, a team that still has a lot of talented players, and they beat them by 20 points.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they put 44 points up against Texas. And so I think we are looking at a shootout type of game. Obviously, they don't have quite the playmakers of a Johnny Manziel. Their quarterback doesn't have his mobility. So I think that we can hopefully blitz him and go after Bo a little bit. But I think this is going to be a game that is, as we get into the fourth quarter, it is still going to be a 10-point ball game. And I think you could easily see a final score here. You know, I'm going to call a final score of 31-20. I think this is going to be a game that we're not going to put up as many points as we did against Texas A&M. And we're going to have to score that late touchdown to make it a, you know, a 10-plus margin. I think this is going to be tight for three quarters.
Yeah, I agree. I had marked down originally 24-16, and you said shootout, I think, three times. And so I just bumped my score up to 34-26. I think it's a I think it's inside of 10 points, which goes against a prediction that I made in the preseason. And I think it's back and forth. I think, you know, look, I'm going to root for the good guys, and I'm going to say that we pull it out in the end, but I'm not going to say what we're pulling it out of at the end.
what do you think as far as the who do you think is going to be the starting corners that we bring out in this ball game? I just want to hear some names here.
I should know. I should have an opinion on this. And honestly, I look at these names and I don't know. you know, let's assume that, you know, I want to say Blue, right? Like, oh, he's going to come back. He's only been out a week. It's a turf toe and we know what that means. And so, and I know there's sprain, you know, there's levels of severity.
Right.
You could have a very bad one or you could have a mild one, right?
Right.
And so if he's been walking around in a boot for the last, you know, 2 weeks and protecting it, it's very well that he could come back. And he starts right. If he does. You know, because next week we've got Georgia State, you know, he, you know, come back and play and we'll get you another week off. You know, we could do that. And so there's the opportunity that he plays. If he does, you know, maybe it is him and Fulton back in the lineup or him and Cyrus back in the lineup and then Geno at the star. If he's not able to go, then maybe it's Fulton and Cyrus with Geno at the star, but a quick rotation with you know, Sylvie or Eddie Jackson. We're going to see some of the youngsters in there.
We're going to see some freshmen.
Who do we see out there first? And I'm rambling because I don't have a good answer. You know, maybe it's Cyrus and Fulton. You know, and that becomes a dynamic too because maybe Jarek's okay. And so we can put him back at the star and we could put Geno at one of the corners. So
no, that would be something we have not seen yet this year.
It would. Sure. And so on one hand, okay, I can feel good because he's on the field, but is he in a position that he hasn't played in practice a lot? I don't know. So,
right.
You know, so that'll be something that will be, you know, that'll be eyes on for me, you know, who are we lining up in and historically I do that, you know, just because it's fun. Are we in a nickel? How are we rotating? Man, I'm worried about who the freaking starters are. So I'm going to be watching that very, very closely. And I would advise fans to do the same.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, hey, I want to do just a couple of things just in wrapping up. I want to give another shout out to, and I'll put a link in the show notes. That'll be on the site, or you can sign up for our newsletter and have it delivered. But secbias.com, chat with us there because we're going to be hanging out there this season and talking ball on that chat as in addition to our podcast there. All the SEC teams are represented, so it's kind of a cool, you know, week by week you get to interact with the fans for different games. But I want to do something, you know, I've asked for folks to give us honest reviews on iTunes. And look, I'm going to tell you, this is one of those kind of behind the scenes how things work. And so you wonder, well, how do ratings work in Google or how do ratings work in iTunes? In iTunes, it goes by downloads and it goes by ratings. And what are people commenting and the grades that people are giving, kind of the social proof on podcasts that are out there. And so if you really want to do something to support the show, subscribe on iTunes so those numbers go up and give us an honest review. I'm not asking for a 5-star review. I'm asking for an honest review. And so go out there and do that. And that's the biggest thing that you can do, help the show and help the program on iTunes. And in fact, if you go into iTunes and just punch in college football under podcasts, we're the number 20 ranked podcast, and that's nationally. That's, you know, the three or four shows that ESPN has, that CBS has, all of those market leaders, right? We're ranked number 20. And so that's pretty impressive. But if we get some additional reviews, I think we can bump that up. And so what I want to do is just take a quick minute and call out. We've had four very recent five-star reviews. And so I just want to call out Trail Star. Dave and Tom provide excellent analysis from preseason to game day with a lot of insight that isn't available anywhere else. Their predictions are normally spot on. And since they're huge Bama fans, how can you go wrong? I think that's great. I appreciate that. William Swords, I've met this gentleman, fantastic guy, big Bama fan. He was the winner of our VOTEC tickets. Alabama fans talking Alabama football. Ugly, thank goodness. There's a lot to talk about, a lot of good to talk about. I never miss a show. We certainly appreciate that, William. Best of the best. This is JPB87. Best podcast available to Alabama football fans. I've listened to them all, and Dave and Tom are in a league of their own, providing the most in-depth, thoughtful analysis and details that are usually overlooked by the popular media. Greatly appreciate that. And the last one, GT, looks like Kavanaugh. This is a must for any Alabama fan. Honest, in-depth analysis, every aspect of the team. What do you think about that, Tom? That's some pretty high praise, right?
Man, absolutely, man. We did a good job of making up some fake names and stuff, and we put all that stuff on there. Now I got to come up with some. That. Now I got to come up with some more names for the next week. No, in all seriousness, guys, we enjoyed doing this, and please be very candid with us. Give us your feedback. If you like it, great. If you don't, tell us what you don't like, so we can improve on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we've only been doing this for a little while, and we can only get better.
Yeah, absolutely. So we greatly appreciate. The five-star reviews. I probably won't call them out every week, but we'll try to do that just because we want to acknowledge the folks that are acknowledging us, and we greatly appreciate it. I'll put an easy link to how you can give us a review. Put that in the show notes. It's also available on the site, so we greatly appreciate that. I know that we've went a little long in this show. I'm not going to apologize for it. We didn't do a show last week, and so we had a lot of passion kind of stored up that we wanted to share with you guys. And according to the feedback, that's what you guys like. So hopefully that works out for everyone. But, hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. We appreciate you tuning in, and roll tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, roll Tide.